The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
In this fantastic and fabulous episode of Mind Pump, for about 20 minutes, we do a little bullshitting. We talk about Justin's plane trip and how he made a friend with the person sitting next to him. This kid was super annoying, but he was a good kid too, and Justin had a good time with him.
Yeah.
We talk about how we use Brain FM when we're on planes in turbulence and about the time I puked on the plane. And then we talk about Justin's poop rainbow.
Shitty rainbow.
If you want to know what that's all about, you got to listen in. Lastly, we talk about my altercation with a homeless person in France. Then we get into the questions. We talk about the science, or lack of science, behind food combinations for optimizing things like digestion, absorption, assimilation, and elimination. In other words, combining starches with fats and proteins with carbs and all this other stuff. Then we talk about juicing, vegetable and fruit juicing, the pros and the cons.
Not juicing like steroid juicing.
Then we cover weight set point and the theory behind it. Do you have a natural weight set point that your body just wants to hover around? Find out in this episode. Lastly, we talk about birth control and how it may be counterproductive to building muscle for some people and how it may actually help other people build muscle. All in this episode of Mind Pump. Finally, Maps Prime Pro
is out
now.
Get some.
It is our newest program. If you want to learn all about it, go to mindpumpmedia.com.
Let's get to the root
and check it out.
Adam, I'm on like Donkey Kong.
Adam, do you sometimes feel like we're babysitting Justin?
Most of the time.
Like we're babysitting him? Like we go on our trips and we're like taking the kid with us.
Hey, you know.
Behave, son.
Yeah. Hey, the hell, man.
I like to play.
Remember that kid you became friends with on the airplane?
Mm-hmm. I do remember that.
That weird kid.
I wish we could show that video without me looking like a total asshole.
We can't because he's young. How old was he? He was probably like 15.
Nah, yeah, maybe like 16, 17.
This kid, we were on a plane, and this kid sitting next to Justin, and he's just... And we're all fucking tired, dude. It's late. Yeah. We're tired.
I was over it. I did not want to sit next to anybody.
We literally, like, before the plane took off, we're waiting in the airport, and all of us are downloading Brain FM sleep, like, music. Like, we're all going to fall asleep on the plane.
Which,
so tired.
By the way, I'll tell you right now, is magical for plane rides, dude.
Oh, dude.
I have to do that.
Especially the last one at Tampa, where I had to fly for 5.5 hours between two people. Mm-hmm. Like, if it was not for that app, I swear to God, dude, it would have been
Adam, worst trip ever. You sleep with your mouth open, which is dangerous around people like Justin. So anyway.
It is dangerous.
So we're all like, we're all so tired. We sit down. We're like, oh, man.
And
like,
you guys and we got, were all together. I was by myself.
Yeah, we got A. We all had the A boarding. Like, we got to board on first. So we're like, fuck, this is great. We get to pick our seats. We all sit down. We're like, put on our headphones. Everybody's like, ready to go to sleep. And Justin made the mistake of taking a little too long to put his headphones on.
I didn't put my headphones on just yet.
Yeah, so he's like reading his magazine and stuff. And then on comes the fucking classroom of kids. I don't know where they came from.
Like somewhere in Ecuador or something.
Something like that.
Somewhere in South America.
And they were all these really smart. And I know this because the whole plane ride, they were all talking. But there was they were really smart kids. They were all just weird. They were all, maybe because they were so smart. You know what I mean? They're all kind of a little
socially
off.
Awkward.
And this fucking kid.
We play high school? What would you say?
High school?
Yeah, high school. Yeah.
And what I noticed was like, none of the kids, all of them were a little weird. They're all cool, great kids. No, they weren't like bad kids, but they're all a little different.
So and great listening to you try to be PC right
it's
now.
It's not even about PC. No, you know what's funny?
They were a bunch of fucking weirdos, dude.
They were a bunch of fucking weirdos. But they weren't bad. Like, they weren't kids. Fuck these kids. They were fine.
Whatever. They're just a bunch of nerds.
But anyway.
They were off.
You know why? Because I identify with them. Anyway, so they're coming on the plane, and there's one kid that none of the other kids want to sit next to. Remember?
So he was Asian kid.
He was looking around, like, he's looking, and like, there's no seats. And he's like, and the teacher's like, find a seat, dude.
Yeah.
He's like, where am I going
to? Sits in the middle seat right next to me.
And the only seat available was right next to Justin. So he sits down next to Justin. And you can tell the other kids didn't want to sit with him for a reason.
Yeah.
So he sits next to Justin, and he just starts talking to you, and he doesn't stop.
He won't shut up.
He does. He's telling you stories about what they did and where he went and what he likes to eat.
Cool.
He's talking about math. And sign, like, all over the place. So, and then there was like a second, like, me and Adam are in the front, and we're just dying because Justin's being very nice, and he's engaging with the kid, and he's talking, and it's just, you know, Justin's tired because you can hear his
We're all exhausted as fuck.
Justin's answers become one, like, word. You know what I mean? Like, yes, no, maybe, because you can
interesting.
Tell. He's like, stop, right? So then Adam turns around.
Tell him about your pet shark. I was like, oh my God, here we go. I was like, I'm going to play along.
Because the kid finally got tired. With him. Yeah, I guess he finally got the clue, like, after like 40 minutes.
It was right when he started.
He kind of stopped talking a little bit, and Adam turns around and goes, hey, Justin, you should tell him about your pet shark.
Yeah. So I go into the elaborate detail about this shark that I have this special tank for and all this stuff, and he's like, whoa, that's so awesome.
And then he was like, and then I jumped in and I said something too.
Something about me being a black belt in like Wing Chun or
something. I'm like, Justin, were you able to bring your katana on the plane, the one that you studied with? He's like, no, I had to pack it. And so the kids keeps asking more questions.
He was getting more and more impressed.
Oh, dude, it was great.
That's like one of those
I was like this crazy, like, evil villain, like, mastermind.
Well, the worst thing, though, was me and Adam are in the front, and we're just dying of the stories that he's telling you. But then we're laughing because then you realize we're laughing.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you start telling shit. Like, you're making things up.
Oh, I was trying to make you guys laugh. Yeah.
Well, at that point, it's like you just own it, right? Because you're like, okay, I'm not getting out of this conversation. I may as well have fun with it.
I kept getting more ridiculous, thinking that he'd be like, oh, well, you're just bullshit.
Talking about how you ride
your shark. He was believing me. Yeah. Like everything I said, I was like, wow, this kid's so gullible.
He's like, you ride your shark? And you're like, yeah, you have to train him that way.
I mean, of course.
So we're dying of laughter. Well, the other kids in the other seats, one of them looks at us, me and Adam, just laughing, and he goes, God, isn't he annoying? And I felt bad immediately. I'm like, no, he's great. I love his stories. And we went back to laughing.
Yeah.
So,
I didn't know. I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah. I think one of the kids.
The other kid was punking him?
One of the kids.
Oh, fuck that kid.
Exactly. So that's when we all, then we all started talking. I'm having a good time. But boy,
all mother
funny.
Bear that kid.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, you know, you're Justin. You're like the you're a great person around kids. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, I've had training, so
yeah.
You know, I told you that we use the Brain FM, like the sleep mode on there. So I actually did a meditation one time. This was pretty cool.
On the plane?
Yeah, it was one of our shorter flights. I don't know if this was Seattle or LA.
Remind me to tell you how I used meditation on the flight once.
Oh, did you really?
Oh, yeah. But you go ahead first.
I knew it was a short flight. I was like, oh, this is only going to be like an hour or whatever. I'm like, I'm not going to get like a deep sleep on this. So I put it on meditation, and I thought, well, I'm going to, and I had people on both sides of me. So I was like, another one of those situations where I'm not very comfortable, right? I'm just, those Southwest fucking chairs are not made for 6'3" dudes, you know, so just not at all.
They're not made for anybody.
So who are they made for?
I literally put Brain FM meditation in, sat up, postured up, and like started doing like breathing and core exercises sitting. Dude, it was the most calming, awesome plane ride literally ever. Was doing that. And
in the middle seat?
Yes.
Wow.
I sat up, I postured upright, activated my core, concentrated on these real deep breaths, had the meditation playing in my ears. That flight went by so fast, and my body, when I got up out of it, felt so amazing. I was like, I've never got up out of a plane ride before and felt like that.
So I always use meditation first on the plane. And then if we have time, then I'll put on the nap one or whatever. But the one time when the meditation came in handy, where were we when we took that small ass shitty plane? And it was
from Spokane to Seattle.
Was that what it was?
Yeah. It was like one of those pond jumper planes where you get outside.
It was like 15 seats on the plane.
About like, that was one of the worst. That's some of the worst turbulence I've ever been. I've been on a lot of flights. That was one of the worst that I've ever been on.
I have. Can I just be honest with you guys?
We dropped like 100 feet.
Can I just be honest with you guys? I had major anxiety. I've never had anxiety like that. I thought, and I knew logically, we're not going to die, but it was so dramatic, the turbulence, where if you didn't have your seatbelt on, you get thrown out of your chair. That's how bad it was.
Yeah.
It was like, whoa.
It was like going on a ride at Disneyland.
And you hear everybody on the plane go, whoa.
Yeah.
There's a fucking lady crying right behind me.
Yeah.
She was literally crying because
of the
turbulence.
Come on, lady. Hold together.
I get air sick really easily. So I'm late with my head back. I got meditation in my head, hella loud. Yeah. And I have my eyes closed. If I open my eyes, I'm a puke. And it was like that for the whole fucking flight. That was horrible.
You know, when it gets bad like that, I have this little thing that I replay in my head that a client said to me years ago, and she was a flight attendant for Southwest. And I think I just came back one time from a trip, and I was sharing her, like, oh my God, I was going through this turbulence, and I was just, my heart stopped. I thought we were crashing or whatever that, and she laughed at me. And she goes, you know, like the likelihood of what that is like, right? And she goes, well, when you feel turbulence in the plane, that's like the same analogy of a car that's like, you know, five mile an hour going over speed bumps.
Yeah, I know.
You know, it's like you're driving that slow, that safe, and it's just you're going over speed bumps, and the likelihood of you crashing your car, you know, in that scenario is similar to the plane getting crashed. And then, and that starts happening to me. I'm like, we're just going over speed bumps.
Yeah.
I say that in my head. Like, it's just a speed bump, Adam. It's just a speed bump. But when it goes on for like 15 minutes, I'm like, well, Jesus Christ, there's enough speed bumps.
Yeah. You just think about how many like plane crashes in the news, you know, you can even identify. It's like so few.
And they're almost,
it makes major headline news, and so it's just like, come on, dude, this is like another.
Well, the reality is, if
that's how I rationalize.
If you're going down, don't fucking.
Yeah, you're done.
You're not gonna feel shit. Yeah, you're just gonna incinerate. Yeah. But what gives me anxiety isn't necessarily that I'm afraid. It's the air sick that I get, like the shaking and shit. Like, and I can't look outside because that makes it worse. So I have to close my eyes, otherwise I'm gonna puke. And so that's my big fear on the plane.
Really?
I just don't like the, because I've actually thrown up on a plane before.
Do you not like roller coasters then?
You know, I can, and sometimes depends how I'm feeling. So if I go on one and I start to get a little motion sickness, then I won't go on anymore. But the worst is in cars and planes and boats. Will get me sick. Cars, especially. If we're going up winding road, that's why I always have to sit in the front of the car.
That's why you sleep right away.
Yeah, that's right. That's probably one of my defense mechanism is to go to sleep. But I have thrown up on a plane. Have you guys ever puked on a plane before?
No.
Yeah, I did.
No.
God. Does your girl ever get annoyed by all the little things that you have to be sensitive about?
No, I make up for it with other things.
Is she? I'm thinking about all this stuff. I'm like, God damn, dude, you can't go to a restaurant, fly on a plane, doing these things without something affecting something on your system. Yeah. She doesn't give you a hard time ever?
No. Like I said, I make up for it. I was in Vegas and I was with my cousins and we went hard. Like we went so hard. You ever go so hard that someone disappears, like one of your party is gone.
Yeah, you don't even
realize
it. And
you're just like, we don't know where he is.
Yeah, we'll reconnect later.
And you at the airplane, like you're waiting for your plane, and you're like, he's not going to make the fucking plane. And right as you're boarding, you see his ass running up with like, you know, like that was this trip. Like that's how hard we went.
Yeah, we did that one time.
I get on the plane, and I'm still a little drunk. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I'm still kind of feeling good. So I'm like, I'm a little drunk. But then it wears off, and the hangover starts to set in as we're flying. And then on top of it, it was hella turbulent, and I fought it the entire way from Vegas to San Jose up until we landed. We landed, and I'm like, I'm fighting it still. I'm like, I made it. Just got to get out of the plane. And those fuckers left us in the plane for like 30 minutes because they had to wait for a little taxi or whatever. Couldn't do it anymore, bro. I opened up the little fucking barf bag, which, by the way, who barfs
that
only
is
that
not
much?
Enough. Yeah. It was.
Yeah.
Come on, dude.
What the
I'm
fuck
like.
Is that? So
it's like,
but I knew this ahead of time.
It's like a bucket.
I knew this ahead of time. I looked at the sale. I'm gonna need like two or three of these. So I asked the people around me, and I was just like,
you can spew in this.
And then I'm like, what do I do with this? Like
Like, just hold on to it.
Like, they're walking. They're not walking around anymore. Everybody's about to get up and get out. So I fucking just left it. Like,
oh no, you did it.
Yeah,
I got a doggy bag.
So yeah. You know they went through the plane to clean it. Like, this
gross.
Motherfucker.
That's so gross.
Found a bag of
that's disgusting.
Throw up. Throw up is grosser than poop.
I mean, it's bad.
Like,
man.
Would you rather find a bag of puke or a bag of poop?
It's a close
human
second.
Human poop?
Yeah, it's a close second.
Human poop, dude. Come
wait
on.
Wait a minute. Yeah. Why? Yeah. Why? What poop is not bad? Like, human poop, I guess,
human
is
poop is the worst.
Yeah.
Did I tell you guys what happened when I was, like, at this coffee shop in downtown Santa Cruz? Like, there's been this problem with, like, vagabond, you know, people, like, that have come in and they set up camps and stuff. And so there's, like, all these, like, angry bums kind of roaming around. And so we're like,
welcome to Santa Cruz.
Right? Hello. Yeah. Let's regulate this. Anyway, so we're sitting at this like nice coffee shop. I'm inside. There's nobody in there. Like, we went at a time, it was like 3 p.m. And so I'm sitting there with my friends. We're chatting, whatever. And we're going to go, you know, get something to eat after that. And we're talking. And all of a sudden, like some homeless character guy comes by, you know, the window. And we're staring out this window. And he looks at us, and there's literally only us in this place. And he takes this ratty, like, clothing item, and he smashes it onto the window, and then he smears it up across, and it was his human shit.
No!
Yeah, no. His shit. And then he ran, and I was just like, shitty rainbow! No. I was like, oh my god, this is like a sketch from heaven! This is like ridiculous! Like, who fucking does this?
He actually smeared his poop?
He smeared his poop, right? Like, right where we were, so we had this rainbow of shit to look at as we're drinking our coffee. I'm like, thank you, sir.
You know...
Did you stay there? I couldn't see.
Bro, we look over at each other and we couldn't believe it. And then we told the manager there, like, hey, this guy, he put some shit on your window. And
like,
he was
like, what do you mean?
And one of the guys laughed. And then the other guy got so pissed off. And he's like, oh, I'm calling the cops. He's like yelling outside. He's getting all pissed off. He's like, that fucker. You know, it was crazy.
Now, yeah. Does somebody, like, when something like that happens, like, does this guy deserve an ass whooping? Like, what? How does that? What?
I think he's. I mean, he's mental. There's mental problems. Like, first off, the whole.
Well, he took off, so I was just like, yeah, I don't even want to get near
he's
that
got
guy.
Some
I would
issues.
Get like some kind of weird. You know,
I think you have to, right?
Yeah,
bacteria
you are.
Infection.
Most homeless people, when they do, you know, when they people do surveys and tests or whatever, most of them have serious mental issues. And then that right there.
Is it really that high of a percentage?
Very high.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Very, very high percentage of homeless people have mental illness. 100%. So when sometimes you see some of them and you're like, you know, just go work and get a job. They have a tough time just being on earth. You know what I mean? A lot of them. They have problems and they probably need to be institutionalized.
Yeah, I'm sorry, dude. You know? But when you start getting crazy and doing shit like that, dude, like somebody's got
to
regulate.
Bro, I had to handle one. I actually had to deal with one. I thought I was going to have to, like, am I going to have to physically have a physical altercation? Because the worry that I had, this guy wasn't necessarily, here, I'll tell you the story first, and then I'll tell you what's going on in my mind. So I went to France years ago with, at the time, my wife and some friends. And we had a layover, and we missed our train, and the next train was in the morning. So we kind of had to spend the night at the station, and then they kicked us out of the station at like 4 or 5 a.m. for cleaning. So we'd take all of our bags and stuff and sleep outside or stay outside the station. Well, we're sitting there with our stuff, and we left our stuff for a second. A homeless dude just comes over and just kind of sits on our bag, just kind of chilling right there.
He's sitting on your bag.
Yeah. Sitting on my backpack. And I'm like, yeah. And I'm
claimed.
Yeah. If you think, I don't think he was claiming it. I think we were just in his spot.
Oh, I see.
Because I think that's where he lived, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So he's chilling there, and I felt zero like physical threat. The guy wasn't big. He was homeless and whatever. So I'm like, he's not
going
to do
hungry.
It. Yeah, he ain't going to get away with anything if he tries to grab my stuff. So I walk over. I'm like, hey, man, you're on our stuff. And he looks at me, and he goes, this is my stuff. And I'm like, oh.
Oh, here we go.
Like, what am I going to do? Like, if I don't want to physically do anything with him because
that's mine now.
What if he's got like a needle on him or something?
Yeah,
like
no,
that?
this is the exact predicament that I was saying when I said, like, well, does a guy deserve an ass whooping like in a situation like this? Like, what do you do? Like, that's got to be such a tough one.
You got to be careful because
yeah, no, I get it.
If they have a needle on them or if you catch a disease or something, right? So I'm like, oh man, what am I going to do? So I'm like, listen, man. You need to leave, get off our stuff, or I'm going to have to, like, pull you off. Like, I'm going to have to push you off and whatever. And weird thing was he spoke broken English, by the way. This is in France, which is kind of cool. So he's like, no, I'm not going to leave. I'm not going to leave. So I'm like, fuck. Like, so I turn to my wife and I turn to my friends. I'm like, do I just grab him? Like, and they're like, well, maybe you should look for a police officer. I'm like, fuck. Like, what if he takes our stuff? Like, what am I going to do? So he had a box of wine next to him that he had set down on the floor.
So you can grab that?
Yeah.
So I did this wide loop so he didn't know I would be coming around him. So I walked away, did this wide loop, snuck up behind him, grabbed his wine, and then he freaked out.
Yeah.
Give that back! And I said, if you don't leave our stuff, I'm going to pour all this wine on the floor. Like, because I know this is important to
him. I think that was a good play.
Yeah,
that's a good and so, I think that was a good play right there.
So he got up, and I took his wine, and I set it on the floor like hella far away. So he took the wine, and he left us alone. And then, here's the best part, he comes back with like five other homeless people, and they're just walking around us. And I'm like, we're going to get jumped by homeless people.
Oh,
this is going to be terrible.
They got a gang.
Yeah, and so, but luckily they didn't do anything, and we ended up making it out of there okay. But yeah, that was my worry. My worry was like,
well played, sir. Yeah. Well played.
Like, what do you do? Because you're going to have to grab him.
Almost became fisticuffs.
And I don't want to hit the poor guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My thought would be grab him because I could easily grab him, subdue
him. Chris Rock was a shake the shit out of him.
And hold him, right? But then what if you grab him and like
shake the shit out of someone like
that? What if he's got like a needle or something and he pokes you? You know
that
what I mean?
Sounds
funny. Shit, I got hepatitis.
That just sounds funny right there. Maybe he's got a needle. Could you imagine he pulls a needle out and like running at you? Like, I don't think that's going to happen.
That happens. Yes, it does, dude. Yeah. That I talk to police officers who've been poked by needles and shit like that. That's true, dude.
Well, I could see that with a police officer. Yeah. I could get these.
That's true. Or poop. Here's another one. Yeah. Like, you know, in prison, like prisoners, who, if they want to fuck with the prison guards and shit, they'll throw their shit at them because poop's got diseases and stuff in it.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, you don't want poop on you.
No, dude. You could probably hold up a bank with poop.
Bring on the shitty bird, please.
Step right up, all you bearded men and all you bearded ladies. This quad is brought to you by Big Top Beard Company, whose all-natural beard oil products not only make your beard smell amazing, but feel amazing, too. Their organic essential oil blends transport you to manly places like the mountains, the desert, the sea, and beyond, all while encouraging a lot of beard nuzzling to boot. Buy it for yourself or as a gift for that special bearded someone at BigTopBeardCompany.com. Enter the discount code MINDPUMP for 33% off at checkout.
First up is from Brooke Donut Girl. What are your thoughts on food combinations for optimizing digestion, absorption, assimilation, and elimination? She has read articles that say you should not eat proteins and starches together.
So this, when I first saw this question about 15 minutes ago, it reeked of like pseudoscience, right? It just sounds like pseudoscience, like don't combine foods because it's not going to... I'm like, this is silly. Like, what are they talking about? So I did a little bit of research, and in Ayurvedic medicine and Chinese medicine, this is a very big thing. They'll tell you specifically to avoid combining particular foods because they affect digestion. They can cause bloating. They can cause issues with how you assimilate food. And so I looked a little deeper because I've said this before, when you have these ancient ways of wellness and health, like Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine, which have been around longer than Western medicine, I'm not saying they're better, I'm just saying they've been around longer, that a lot of their methods stand the test of time. And what I mean by that is if you have something, Chinese medicine's thousands of years old, if something is just plain false or doesn't work at all or does the opposite of what it says, over those thousands of years, the Chinese medicine practitioners will eliminate it and other things will be put in place that tend to work, which is why when you look at like Ayurvedic medicine and Chinese medicine recommendations with like herbs, you know, where they say, you know, if you're stressed, take ashwagandha, right? Ashwagandha is great for stress. It helps your body deal with stress. Well, now Western science is actually showing that it does in fact have this, you know, these stress fighting effects in the body, where it kind of helps your body reach homeostasis depending on if, you know, certain hormones are too high or too low or whatever. So they were actually right in the way that they explained it. And you see this with a lot of stuff that's in both Chinese and Ayurvedic medicine. So when I saw that both of them, both those methodologies are big on this, I said, okay, I wonder if there's something to this. So I looked a little deeper and I found this Dr. Pickering, who is a big proponent of this. And he talks about how some foods need certain types of digestive, digestive acids and enzymes, which may be counterproductive to other types of foods. For example, if you eat lots of starches, that may produce more of an alkaline effect in the stomach, whereas foods that are high in proteins and fats may require more of an acidic effect in the stomach. And so eating one first over the other one may cause problems. So is there some truth to this? I'm not sure. I think it's pretty cool. I think I want to look into it.
Well, I right away, things that sound fishy to me is words like optimize, right? So optimize digestive absorption. Like, what exactly does that mean? Like, we know that if you pair any carbohydrate, whether it be a starch or any other carb for that matter, with a protein or a fat, you're going to lower the glycemic index, which is basically how fast that food gets converted over into blood sugar, right? Or it converted over into glucose, excuse me. So if that's the case, like, of course, like the faster it's being digested and processed into your body, it just makes sense that that would be healthy. But then there's also detriments to that also, because it does. Then you spike insulin, mm-hmm. which, and then now your body's in a state where it's ready to store fat. So I could see there's pluses and minuses to both to either or.
Yeah,
I could get where having it, you know, a food that's faster on the, or higher on the glycemic index is going to get digested quicker and converted over to glucose faster. Therefore, the body doesn't have to work as hard. So that makes sense to me. How you could put this together. But then I also think there's detriments to that, and I think there's benefits to pairing it with a protein or a fat to slower or lower the glycemic index. So there's pluses and minuses to both.
That's a very good point, very interesting point. But then we read some of these new studies that are coming out with these continual glucose monitors,
mm-hmm.
and they're finding that the individual variance yeah. is like trumps that. It completely yeah. trumps it.
Well, that's where I'm, you know, most of my thought process is going in that direction with most of this, these ideas. And this may be something that has validity with like certain individuals, but completely not in other individuals. And, you know, I was thinking about this. There's another philosophy. I remember somebody talking about like what the order of food that you eat and all that as far as digestion purposes. Do you know much about that, Sal, as far as like, you know, loading it up with like cruciferous vegetables first and then kind of like stacking?
I don't know much about this.
The purpose of like digestive enzymes and things like that?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I mean, all that stuff
all
makes
stuff, it's like, yeah.
It makes sense to me.
It does. Well, let me ask you guys this.
It's like logical.
Have you guys noticed that if you eat a particular food or particular type of food that you prefer to have this other type of food with it help?
Absolutely.
What have you guys noticed?
See, that's why right away this is funny to me, because I find like when I have something like chicken or steak, having it with a rice or a sweet potato, I actually find it complements the digestive process for me than the other way around.
So if you just eat chicken
by itself
without rice, you don't digest it as well.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I wonder, I
also always feel like when I have a big bowl of vegetables too, like with my meal, it makes a difference too. Like the biggest though out of all those has nothing to do with the food combination. I notice a difference from sitting down and eating versus eating and then making sure I get up right away and move. Like just gravity and what it the role it
getting
plays
things moving.
The role it plays in the digestive process, I find trumps all food combinations. Like, you know, being a guy who's tracked and weighed and measured and been so crazy about all this stuff, I played with so many different combinations of, you know, pairing certain fats with proteins and carbs and mixing them all up and large bowls of veggies before or after. I've done all this stuff. And personally for me, like the biggest out of all of them, like moving. moving after consuming food, when you talk about the digestive process and how my body feels afterwards, to me, that's the greatest out of all of them.
It makes such a big difference that this is actually a big area of issues, of problems that astronauts have. Like when astronauts go into space, they have a lot of unique problems because of the zero gravity.
Because
of zero gravity. Like they'll lose muscle, bone mass. Like they have to exercise every day just to stop.
So they have to physically sort of like massage, some of the digestive process. Or?
There's a lot. I'm not quite sure what they have to do aside. What I do know though is that digestive issues are prevalent because they don't have gravity. There's a reason why your butthole is at the bottom of your body,
right.
And your mouth is at the top.
Yeah.
It's because if it were the other way around, it would be very difficult to digest because gravity plays a huge role,
right,
in the
Well, it's so much to the point that, I mean, and this is what really Mind Pump has always been about is teaching people the bigger rocks, right, in these things. And I'm not saying that this article might not be true or there's not some validity to it. I do know that we've seen enough with people like Euron and the glucose monitors and the difference and variance of individuals that, a cookie affects one person this way and then affects another person totally different, like as bad as a yam looks as bad as a cookie for another person.
Well, I'll tell you what's crazy for me. So I've always been very sensitive to carbohydrates. So if I eat a lot of them, I'll get real kind of sleepy and lethargic afterwards, which tells me that I'm sensitive to them. So I would save them for later on in the evening if I had them, or I wouldn't eat them at all. Ever since I did that whole herbal cleanse, I hate fucking calling it that because now I sound like one of those charlatans. But
detox.
Where I did I took like wormwood and black walnut and all those things to cleanse. I kind of hate using that, cleanse my body. My gut health has been a lot better. And my tolerance for things has changed. So, like, if I eat starches and stuff now, I don't get that same effect where I feel like I'm lethargic afterwards at all. I can eat now a little bit of carbohydrates at lunch, and I don't feel like I need to take a nap afterwards like I did before. And my tolerance for caffeine is a lot better. Very interesting. So, and Rob Wolf was speculating on why some people, because in these studies, what they found, which is really mind-blowing, is you have people who will have a higher insulin spike and blood sugar spike with like a fat than they would with like a cookie. And he couldn't figure it out like what it was. And it wasn't fats in general. It would be like a particular food. Like I ate an avocado and I get this crazy spike in insulin. And then I ate this banana and I didn't get one at all, which makes no sense whatsoever until you start to examine the potential immune response that person may be having. So if you have an immune response, then that causes the liver to shoot out glycogen, and that'll cause your blood sugar to spike. So I'm wondering if for me, that's what happened, is I was having these immune responses from having inflamed gut.
Yeah,
I did that whole process.
I was gonna say, from it being permeable from the leaky gut where it goes in, it identifies some of these nutrients as like a potential threat, and it creates this sort of...
And then my liver just jumped, and I got this blood rush, sugar rush and this crash. And now I don't necessarily get that as much. As far as food combinations are concerned, if I eat a heavy fat protein meal, I almost always have some kind of a high fiber leafy green vegetable source because it really makes a big difference with my digestion. As far as order of food that I eat, what I've done in the past is I've always eaten what I thought was the most important food first.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So because muscle building and exercise and all that stuff was always my priority, the first thing I would eat would be my protein and my fat. So it would always be like my meat first, and then I would move on to my other stuff. Now, growing up in an Italian household, we never ate meat first. It was always
bread and pasta.
Starch. Yeah. Starch came first. The meat came after. Now, listening to my body and really being in tune with it, if to be quite honest, I probably better off eating the vegetable first.
That's what I do.
Do you really?
Yeah, I eat vegetables first.
Yeah.
If it's there.
And I've done, when I do it that way, I notice that my digestion seems a little bit better. But this is pretty interesting stuff. I'm going to look a little deeper into it so I can give a little bit better advice. But I will say this, on the long list of things that you should pay attention to,
it's towards the bottom.
It's towards the bottom.
It's like meal timing.
I mean, you talked on your gut, which I think is important too. And that's definitely someone, I think a lot of people can relate to that. But I challenge anybody who hasn't done this is, you know, make a conscious effort, like literally make an effort that every time you eat, that go for a little 5 to 10 minute walk, literally 5 to 10 minutes. It doesn't have to be that long. Just as soon as you're done eating, don't just go lay down and watch TV or just sit at the desk and go back to work. Make a conscious effort to walk for 5 to 10 mm-hmm. minutes and watch how amazing you feel.
Yeah, the movement helps digestion. Remember when you're walking, your pelvis is shifting. So all of the digestive
chew
organs.
Chew your food more.
Chew your food, yeah, definitely. All your digestive organs are there and they're moving. And what a lot of people don't realize is some of these deep hip flexor muscles are right on top of and around some of your digestive organs. So when you're walking and you're activating muscles like your psoas, for example, it's actually massaging these digestive organs and helping the digestive process. This is why when you have like appendicitis, for example, one of the tests that they'll do to see if you have appendicitis is they'll do a psoas test. They'll actually have you contract your psoas, and if it causes lots of pain, because it's sitting right there, right on top of your appendix, if there's...
So they can rule it out.
Yeah, if there's lots of like severe pain with just trying to flex your psoas, then it might just be
the psoas.
Then the likelihood is it's appendicitis.
Oh, because it's protecting it?
It's sitting right on top of it. Hmm. So that's like one way to push on the appendix is to contract that muscle. So walking post, and in all the old cultures do it too, by the way. All the old cultures, like Mediterranean cultures, Asian cultures, they all have a ritual of after having dinner or whatever, having a big meal, is you go for a nice walk.
It's 100% been one of the biggest game changers for myself personally. And I really didn't make a conscious effort to do it until I got into my 30s, until later on when I was trying to stay leaner and these were little. And it's a great way to burn an extra few calories. I think it's a win all the way around, you know. And it's just you have to create the habit, though, first, because we're Americans, we're the opposite. I mean, it's if you really start paying attention, and I always challenge my clients to do this stuff, is like, you know, hey, pay attention when you're these foods, like when we enjoy some of the things like wine or cheeses or desserts or stuff that, you know, we consider bad foods. You know, what really kills us is we just tend to do it at the worst times. You know, it's like not only were we lazy all day, but then we decide to have this big meal and then we follow it up with a dessert and then we decide to sit and watch TV. It's like, well, fuck. If you actually just made the conscious effort to get up and walk
right
around
before bed.
Yeah, right? Like, exactly. So if you actually just made this conscious effort to burn and use and stand up afterwards and walk and move and help that digestive process, like, that all will make a big, big difference if you make effort.
We sound like a bunch of old men. Oh, you know what I'm saying? We're talking about walking after eating.
Little by little, our conversations are turning into
poop. You know
what?
You should probably, you know, eat at like 4:30. For dinner, because
dude, I wish I had.
I like to take a nap.
Yeah,
before
I get the early bird special.
I wish I had some of the gems that we drop on this show back when.
Oh,
I was
absolutely,
in my early 20s. Because
I just find it hilarious because it's like
it does sound
things that you're like, oh, you old man, whatever,
dude.
Yeah.
I remember.
Well, do you remember being a trainer? And actually, I actually used to laugh at people that used to say that when I'd ask them, do you exercise, do you do this? And they're like, oh, I make sure I go on all these walks. And I'd be like, oh, they're not exercising.
Walks.
Yeah. I used to scoff at it. Like, yeah. Come on. Like, you know. Like,
salads.
Where now, on the opposite, like when I start, I'm like, I tell people, like, listen, just start with a walk. You know, like if you don't walk at all, let's start with that, you know, and we'll build on that.
I just remember as a kid hearing the older people in my family, they were probably in their 50s. And they'd be talking about how, like, I can't eat that. I get constipated. My digestion. Oh, I don't feel.
Like
I took a nice
topic.
Oh, I took
day,
a poop
yeah.
the other day. I felt so good. I remember thinking, like, what the fuck are you guys talking about? Yeah. Like a poop.
Yeah.
Who cares? And all, as you get older, you're like, that's everything.
Oh my God, I had such good sleep. it's like, I always get sleep.
My entire day is based on if my morning poop was good.
Yeah, totally.
If I had a good poop, I'm having a good day.
If I didn't have heartburn all day, I'm a champion. Yes. You know,
I'm
killing it.
Quick commercial break. Hey, people ask us all the time how they can support Mind Pump. Here's what you can do. You can go to www.brain.fm/mindpump and get 20% off Brain FM for meditation or focus. You can also go to audibletrial.com/mindpump and get a 30-day trial plus one free audio book. Lastly, you can go to getnatureblend.com/mindpump and you will get a discount on Ben Greenfield's CBD product.
Next up is Elizabeth Marie Fitt. Can you talk about juicing?
Yes.
Juice up, bro.
Yeah, initially when Doug said this question, we're like, steroids?
Like, what? We just talked about steroids.
Like, no, talking about vegetable and fruit juice.
Yeah, you know, someone asked me this, a reason why I picked this question, because I got asked this just recently, and I thought, you know what, we talked about this on the show, but it's been a long time. We came out like, fuck, this was early episodes, I think in the early hundreds, where we talked about antioxidant drinks and super juices and detox.
Goji berry juices.
Yeah,
and all that shit.
All those juices out there. And then also your Jack LaLanne juicer or whatever. And the and juicing.
Don't you dare talk shit about LaLanne.
Juicing all your fruits and vegetables. And
Mount Rushmore.
You know, so here's what we discussed and what we talked about with juicing is that nothing is going to replace whole foods. There's just bottom line. And, you know, if you have a friend or you have somebody who's done like some juicing protocol and they talked about all the great health benefit. Oh, my God, I felt so amazing. Oh, this like, oh, it's just more than anything else. It's that person was probably
completely deficient.
Yes. Yeah. Deficient in all these vitamins and minerals that are provided through fruits and vegetables. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden they're squeezing 1,000 times the value of what they even need. Yeah. And so their body is reaping the benefits of that.
It's like a sponge. It's like, oh yeah, finally some nutrients.
Right. Like, oh my God, I haven't seen vitamin C in fucking 3 months, you know? And like, I just got a whole fucking shit ton of it. Like, I feel great. Like
flood the system.
So when it comes to, juicing initially, it didn't really get mainstream or semi-mainstream appeal until I think the 1930s. And
yeah, what did make it popular?
There was a guy who invented the juicer and the first juicer. And then Jack LaLanne was a big proponent of it. And Jack LaLanne, as we all know, is like the godfather of fitness and very, very healthy man. There are some benefits to juicing. And here's where they are. Here's where they start and kind of end. If you need a concentrated source of a particular nutrient, this is one of the better ways to get it. So if you have a nutrient deficiency, like, you know, vitamin A, or you need vitamin C, and this is how juicing was used for a little while. It was medicinal. Like, you need more vitamin A, or, you know, you're low on vitamin A. Well, they didn't really use supplements back then. So what they would do is they'd say, okay, take these particular vegetables, juice them, and drink them so that you're consuming, you know, thousands of milligrams of a vitamin that in order for you to get before, you'd have to eat bushels and bushels and bushels of this vegetable that you wouldn't be able to do any other way. Now, that being said, if unless you're doing this for a particular reason, like a specific, like I said, you have a specific deficiency or something you're working on, I don't see any other benefit in it, because what you're doing is you're taking a fruit or vegetable that has all these amazing health benefits and ingredients and chemicals and stuff that are in the plants naturally, and you're throwing away a nice chunk of them when you throw away the fiber of the fruit or the vegetable or the plant material.
Right, the cell wall of it.
You're squeezing out the fluid, but then you're throwing away. So it's like you're taking a big piece of it and you're throwing it away. Not only that, but you increase its sugar content dramatically, because again, now you're consuming, you know, like one carrot doesn't have very much sugar in it at all. But if you drink a big glass of carrot juice, you've consumed the sugar of several carrots, more than most people would eat at one sitting. And so now you're getting into the kind of, you know, if it's good for you, great, but more isn't always better.
Yeah.
Fruit juice is the worst. Fruit juice, I never recommend anybody
like pure
drink.
Sugar,
There's no reason to drink fruit juice. You're taking fruit, which is healthy, and then you're turning it into a sugar drink. You know, a glass of apple juice is something like 20-something grams of sugar and is like, you know, 6 or 7 or 10 apples in one glass, when nobody would ever eat that many apples at one sitting. It's, right. And so you get some detriments from it, from doing that.
Well, and there's just a digestive process that we're sort of skipping by like shredding all this like fibrous fruit and vegetables, and then you know, just having everything be a liquid and easy to process. And you know, like you need that, the timing of all that. That's important, you know, for your stomach to really process.
Well, there's a lot of natural checks and balances that we have in nature. And I think it's all due to evolution, right? We evolved, we co-evolved with our environment. And so if I'm a human and I go and I chew on, you know, the bark or whatever of a white willow tree, there's a certain amount of a chemical that is very, very closely related to aspirin. In fact, I believe it's the base of aspirin, or maybe a little bit different. And so I'm going to get some pain relief. My ability to consume enough of that bark to give me an overdose effect is difficult because it's limited by the amount of bark that I can chew.
But you could do it through opening up those pill bottles and friggin' swallowing those.
Or if I took the bark and processed the shit out of it and extracted whatever. Now, and so nature kind of, now of course there's lots of things in nature that can poison you, but you know, you look at fruits and vegetables, number one, in nature, fruits and vegetables, you find some sometimes, and then there's long periods of time where you don't find some, and you don't find them in concentrations like you would after we learned how to farm. Like, there never in nature would you walk and then come upon an orchard of apple trees or rows and rows of spinach and broccoli and all that stuff. It just didn't happen in nature. You'd find them, you'd forage, you'd find a few. There was that limiting factor. Well, there was a limiting factor that fruit was probably never consumed frequently in mass amount. It was consumed in mass amount when we found it. We ate the fuck out of the bush of whatever, but that was it, and we didn't find any more. And vegetables and fruits don't look the way they do now because we bred them to be these calorie starch bombs.
Monster,
like
sugar.
You can look at paintings from the Renaissance era where at the time it was real popular to paint like fruits, you know, pictures of fruit, and they'll be painting like apples and whatever. They don't look like what we eat now.
They're tiny.
No, an apple is much smaller, and when you cut it in half, it's like full of seeds and fiber.
You have to work your way through all that stuff.
We bred it to become, to reduce its fiber content. We breed them to be sweet, and you know, when a fruit tastes sweet, that's because it's its highest fruit. That's when it has its higher sugar content.
Keep reproducing those and planting those.
And having all this flesh, you know what I mean? Look at corn. Corn is a great one. Natural corn was like one singular spindle or string with, like, you know, sporadic kernels up all along it. That was a corn. That was a corn plant. Now you've got this starch bomb. You know, this huge cob of just tons of corn kernels all around it, packed full of starches. And that's because we learned how to breed them that way. Mm. So there's all these natural checks and balances. And one of the checks and balances is your ability to chew the food, eat it, and the room in your stomach.
Yeah.
Now I can't fit 15 apples in my stomach, but I can drink 15 apples worth of juice.
And isn't it interesting that, like, all these different condensed supplements and pills, like, their whole thing in the marketing of it is, you know, having this sort of lining over it, so that way it has this timed release to it. So it's like they're trying to emulate a lot of these things that you're bypassing by not, like, chewing through, you know, the fibrous fruit or vegetable.
Yeah, food does that naturally. Naturally releases stuff when you're supposed to. Yeah.
Now with clients, I would allow them to do this like this, and this is where I do and I don't like juicing. I don't like juicing used as a weight loss strategy, or you know, I'm going to try and have a juice every day. Like, that's a good goal to have or something. I try and teach my clients to learn to assess their eating habits, right? So, like, right now, those that follow my story show that, like, every week I post my food rotation. So I'll look at, like, oh, wow, it's been a long time since I've had spinach, kale, or, like, a good green veggie with lots of iron in it. Like, I haven't done something like that in, you know, 3 or 4 days. I just happen to be at Whole Foods. I'm picking up my eggs this morning for breakfast. I'm going to have, maybe I'll order a green smoothie, you know, a green juice from the Whole Foods or whatever, and get a juice like that. So that has obviously a ton of kale and spinach or whatever it is that I'm looking for. So because you notice that you're not getting a certain or a specific nutrient in your diet on a regular basis, and then you're at a place where I can get it done, or I have that at home and I haven't had an opportunity maybe to make it, and I go, hey, you know what? This morning I'm going to start my day off with a great big green smoothie because the last 2 days I've been really low on my greens and I haven't had any in my diet for whatever the reason may be. And so I'm aware of that. Therefore, I do something like this to implement that into my routine. But it's intermittently put in there based off of what you're eating or not eating on a regular basis. So I kind of teach that for my clients. Like, hey, because some of them like it, enjoy it, and some of them notice that they don't get enough of certain foods, and if you're using it intermittently throughout the diet like that, I have less of a problem with it. Where I think when people make it a goal or use it as a weight loss strategy, I think is where they go wrong.
There's actually been cases of people, and you have to really push it to do this, but like anything, you know, people are like, oh, it's healthy, so I'm going to do it all the time and do a lot of it. There's been cases of people getting vitamin overdose or toxicity from some of the fat-soluble vitamins like vitamin A from drinking too many like kale juices, where they'll just drink four smoothies a day or whatever and just pound kale over and over again and then end up getting these symptoms of toxicity because they're consuming way more nutrients than they ever would be able to do.
Iodine?
Vitamin K. I think there might be iodine.
I've heard of people like having too much iodine from just this overconsumption of kale.
Drink a ton of carrot juice over a period of time and you'll notice your skin will start to turn orange. That's from the beta carotene.
Yeah.
So I personally will drink a vegetable juice every once in a while, but I'll do it purposely for its concentration of nutrients.
Right, like I was saying. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You knew you were missing these types of nutrients, and so I'm going to get a concentrated form because I know I've been lacking it. Mm-hmm. Makes sense that way to me.
Happy, healthy, and free. Is the weight set point legitimate?
So the weight set point theory...
It's still a theory? This is something that's debated?
So there's a lot of confusion around it because...
Maybe that's where the debate is.
Because marketers in the whole diet and weight loss industry, for a little while here, in like the 90s, this was like a big thing where they were like, change your weight set point. Like the reason why you lose weight and gain it is because you don't move the set point.
Oh, yeah.
And
that was all market. You know, leave it to the fitness industry to take a little good information, a little bit of truth, market the fuck out of it, and then now everybody's confused.
No. What they would say is we'll change this. Our program is different because it changes your set point, and then you never gain weight again because that's your new natural weight and blah, blah, blah. So here's why I think your weight set point, at least the way they talk about it, is bullshit. First off, there is, of course, a natural weight set point. But there's a healthy set point. And the reason why it doesn't make that big of a difference is all you got to do is look around. Look around everyday Americans. If the weight set point was really powerful, we would not have
all these overweight
crazy
people.
Obesity walking around. Because I can guarantee
you. You can override it.
I can guarantee you they weren't born with genes that said, hey, your natural weight set point is 275 at 5'6". Like that doesn't. That's not the case. Your natural weight set point you will find when you lead a very healthy lifestyle. I'm myself starting to really figure out that my body has a range that it likes to sit at, and it's about 187 to about 190, 192. Now, I can make it go above and below that by manipulating factors like exercise and nutrition. Like if I push muscle building, I can go in the 190s, 200s, and above. But if I just listen to my body and do what I think is right for it, to feel good, which includes resistance training and cardio sometimes and, you know, eating a particular way, it just likes to settle right around there. And that's what they find. What they find is if you lead a really healthy lifestyle, that you'll find this kind of weight set point. Now, that being said, there's a weight your weight set point is based on your lifestyle. So your natural weight set point may be at obese if you're leading a lifestyle that leads to that. You know what I'm saying? So when people are like, hey, no matter what I do, my body weight's at 250. I'm just overweight and there's nothing I can do about it. Well, your body's naturally at that body weight because of what you're doing.
Your weight set point.
It's adapted to that.
Your weight set point's like love. You'll know it when you find it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? you'll know it when you find it. And it, just like Sal said, I know there's a place where my body likes to be and I constantly push it in and out of that range and I know when I'm doing that. Like I'm right in the middle of that right now. For me to gain and be 225, 230 pounds and get bigger like that, it's a constant effort and I can feel it. My body doesn't move as well. I'm not digesting food the same way. And it's not bad. It's just I can feel that it's extra work for my body. And then I know when I'm in this sweet spot where, you know, and everything from my energy levels to the food digestion to my poops, to my sleep, to my mobility, like it all, when you're at that set point, when you really find that, like Sal was saying, when you're truly, truly healthy and balanced, your body talks to you. It lets you know you're there. Like you can,
I think that's why it's too subjective.
You know,
it's like,
It's like love.
It's an idea, bro. It's an idea. You know, it's like internally, yeah, you're like, oh, I feel best around this weight. And I was like, had all these healthy practices in place. And you kind of have an ideal idea of where you know, you feel the best. And so it's like, then you identify that. But it's like, that's anything. Like, anybody could come up with whatever, you know, well, I feel great at this weight and they're like obese, you know. So it's like, whatever. Like, it's like whatever you feel like the set point is for you. I mean, it's too subjective for me to get behind it.
What you really want to think about is, when you think of weight set point, is you have a potential. So everybody's born with, you know, their genes, and their genes kind of determine their potential. So let's say my potential is 160 pounds to 220 pounds, like naturally, right? If I try to push outside of those, I'm going to really hurt myself, get sick, and I'm going to have to do extreme measures to go beyond those. So that tends to be my range. I made up that number by those numbers, but that's my range. And to go outside of it would require me to do real extreme things, or to be really unhealthy, or to take like anabolic steroids or something like that. So, and there may be someone else who's got a higher set point or a different set point or a different range. You know, there may be a dude that just, you know, he's going to hold on to more muscle than I am. And so his potential is much higher than mine. This is true for a lot of our genetic traits. Like, you know, even intelligence, they're showing you have kind of this range, and you can push yourself to the higher limit of that range, but you might not have the same potential as like a Stephen Hawking, for example. So, you know, that being said, a huge percentage, or you have so much power over where you go within that range, and that's determinant on your lifestyle, how you eat and mm-hmm. how you move. So the whole weight set point, you know, theory type of thing, it was made real important by people who were trying to sell diets and programs and products.
They want you to focus on something specifically.
In reality, it's not. Don't even worry about it at all. You know, just go where you're going to go, whatever your goals are. That's your set point.
Quick commercial break, you guys. We keep getting asked all the time, how can I support the Mind Pump family? Here's one of the best ways you guys can. You guys love that Chimera coffee that we have. Chimera coffee with a K. You go to chimeracoffee.com, put in the discount code MINDPUMP for 10% at the checkout. Also, if you guys want to know how I have this luxurious beard and you want one too, go to BigTopBeardCompany.com. Put in the discount MindPump again, but this time for 33% off. Also, you guys, if you guys have not tried Ben Greenfield's new bars out, they're fantastic. If you want some, go to BenGreenfieldFitness.com/NatureBite. Put in the code MindPump and get 10% off. Go check it out.
Darby Marie Fit read that taking birth control is counterproductive for building muscle. She believes it said females taking oral contraceptives have lower blood levels of natural anabolic hormones. Is it true? If so, to what extent would it limit muscle building ability?
This is hard.
So
this is tough because the individual variance is going to be
What kind of birth control they're on.
Well, and again, here's a situation too where taking birth control counterproductive building muscle. She believes in the females taking oral contraception.
Yeah, getting pregnant is counterproductive.
Have lower blood levels of natural anabolic hormones. Like, yeah, you know, absolutely, that could be true. And that is not ideal for a woman trying to build muscle. But is it still possible? Is she still going to have enough hormones to still build muscle? I mean,
well, so they've actually done a few studies on this where they've tested, and they're not perfect. I don't necessarily like how they conducted the studies, but the results are mixed as to whether or not it reduces athletic performance. Now, does it impact athletic performance? Of course. I mean, you're changing the hormonal signaling in your body. It's going to have an impact on your body. Obviously, you can't get pregnant and you know when you're on it, so it's doing something. It's doing more than just that as well, because these hormones don't just do that. They also do other things. For example, there's been some studies that have shown that during ovulation, the risk of ACL tear is actually higher, and they're not quite sure why. They think it might have to do with the estrogen receptors in the ACL tissue, or it could have to do with the fact that women move a little differently when they're ovulating. This has been observed as well, and that might have to do with the ACL. But it's for sure going to have an impact on you. Whether or not that's good or bad is based on the individual, and I'll give you an example. If you're a woman that has terrible cramps, terrible PMS, terrible symptoms from your period.
Oh, I already know you're going with this.
Sometimes taking the pill balances shit out, and now you feel better, and now you're working out better, and you're eating better. And for you, it was productive. It actually contributed to better results.
Excellent point.
For other women, it may have the opposite.
This is what I meant by the individual variance, because I feel like it could change. It cannot. It's probably not an ideal environment, right? It's probably not the perfect, but you may get so many other benefits because of that, right? Mm-hmm. That may end up giving you a better workout, being more consistent nutritionally, like higher energy levels. So your intensity level's better in the gym. I mean, there's so many other things that you could be benefiting from that actually helps you build muscle, even though you're at a slight disadvantage because you're on birth control. Mm-hmm. So you have to personally assess that yourself. And again, like they'll take, a study like this that we're splitting hairs on the difference that it could potentially make. And a lot of times, you got to look deeper into some of these studies too. Like, what are they trying to, sell something or promote something behind it? And so they're trying to use a scare tactic that, oh my God, this isn't women that take birth control pill. Your birth control may not be able to build muscle. So here, take our supplement. This helps increase your natural hormone. Normally a study like this is then attached to something like that that's promoting you to take something else to help that environment because you're at a disadvantage. So they take a little bit of science that is probably true. Just so they can market or put a spin on it, or scare you for a headline.
So when they also do studies on how many female athletes take birth control, it's actually pretty high. It's over 80%, which is higher than the population. So more female athletes take birth control than just regular athletes that are women. But that doesn't necessarily mean they're taking it for any other reason other than if they're athletes and they train a lot, they probably don't want to get pregnant.
Right, I was going to say that could be their
they don't want to deal with what's going on. That being said, you're seeing a trend now, which we haven't seen since the introduction of hormonal contraception, which is more and more women, young women, are opting to not take birth control.
Katrina never has.
Yeah, I know you were saying that.
She's 36 years old and she's never taken anything like that before.
You used to not, for a while there, it was growing. More women were taking it. It was like this whole revolution, right? When it first got introduced, it was great because it gave women the power to not get pregnant. So it was a real big part of even the feminist movement. But and it grew over the decades. And now we're starting to see less women take them, and the reasons that they're saying they're not taking them is because of some of the side effects, like the weight gain, the moodiness, and some of the perceptions that taking birth control, like there's been a couple studies that have shown taking birth control increases certain health risks, like blood clots and even some types of cancers, estrogen dominant cancers like breast cancer, for example. So you're seeing more and more women opt out of taking them. My personal opinion on birth control is, definitely take advantage of your reproductive, abilities. So whether it's condoms or birth control, that's a very smart thing to do. One of the worst dilemmas you could get into is being pregnant and, being unwanted pregnancy. But besides that, I know a lot of women, I've had a lot of female clients, young female clients in their 20s who took birth control for a symptom. They've been on birth control since they started their period.
I know a lot of girls have done that.
And it wasn't because they weren't even having sex at the time.
Because it helps with their cramps, right?
Cramps, or they had lots of bleeding or whatever. And my, my thought on that is with anything, if the body's in an optimal state of health, and of course there's exception to this, but if it's in an optimal state of health, then you probably wouldn't need to supplement with a hormone to handle a symptom. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've had female clients that terrible...
You're going to get roasted for something.
Maybe. maybe. I'll tell you what. I've never been in
this situation. Attack of the vaginas this week, bro.
No.
I'm staying silent this whole topic. Yeah.
Listen, here's the thing.
Good, it's your turn, bro. I took the onslaught last week.
No. If there's anything you have to take for your body, In many cases, it's not. You don't have to take it. There's something going on with your diet and your lifestyle that is contributing to a lot of these symptoms. So, like, I've had female clients who would work on their nutrition and incorporate certain supplements like evening primrose oil, for example, and make a huge impact on symptoms of PMS, like cramps and pain and stuff. I've had clients with really bad issues like, what's it called? Fibroids, for example, who will change their diet, eliminate sugar, go on a ketogenic diet, and have dramatically lowered amounts of pain and stuff. So, my advice always is, it doesn't matter man or woman, if you have to take something, like you have arthritis or you have this pain or you have this autoimmune issue and you have to take these, you know, these drugs, look at the way you're living and see if that can have a positive effect on those symptoms. And in many cases, a human body that's in an optimal, healthy environment, your health is optimized, you'll find a lot of your symptoms. Let's take a basic one. There's people that have to take medications for constipation weekly, every week. They have to take medications for constipation, and their doctors don't even. I mean, they don't even consider that maybe there's things in their diet that could have major impacts on that.
Isn't that crazy? Not maybe, for sure, dude. Yeah. Like, when have you ever met anybody who has constipation that wasn't their diet?
Just like eating a block of cheese.
Yes, dude, their diet just...
I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense to me.
I'm trying, it won't come out. Yeah,
haven't had fiber in a month, but fuck, I have no idea what's going on.
Well, that's an easy one to connect, right? But how about when you go to the doctor and you're like, I have a skin issue, you know? You have psoriasis. Has any of your doctors said to you, you know, Adam, let's look at your diet. Maybe your diet's making
it
worse.
Not only have they not done that, but I have brought to them several times, like, what do you think about this? Or I've been reading on this, and could this be this nutrient? And it was you who just recently brought the possibility of vitamin D. And I was like, God, you know, this is crazy now that you say this, because when I think about it, I was someone who had tons of sun exposure growing up, never had psoriasis, anything like that. Then all of a sudden I'm 23, 24 years old and psoriasis comes out of nowhere and then progressively gets worse as I get older. And then I think I remember the dramatic shift in looking at my skin when I was in my 20s, because when I started working for 24 Hour Fitness, I was in the gym indoors with no sun exposure all day long. I worked 10-hour days, 12-hour days for like years on years. And I became like this super white guy, like Justin White. Like I was used to being so
dark. He's always our litmus test for white.
Right. And then you come and you bring that to me about vitamin D. And I thought, God, I don't know why that never even dawned on me. Like, I never even thought of that. And I've already, but it sucks because I've been prodding my dermatologist.
Probing.
Probing is actually what I was looking for. Yeah. Not prodding.
Sorry.
I've been probing my
probing and prodding.
Probing my dermatologist for years now on, like, you know, do you think it could be this in my diet?
But you've also noticed changes with just other things. Like when you said, when you eliminate certain foods like sugars and processed foods, you said your psoriasis gets a lot better.
Yeah, it was probably the best it's ever been in the last couple of years was when I run a closer to a ketogenic diet.
To me, it's fucking crazy that people don't even consider that perhaps their diet and their movement don't have an impact on their some of these symptoms that they may be taking birth control to control. That's all I'm saying is that, you know, take a look at that. Look, there's studies now that already show, by the way, the evening primrose oil, that there's a fatty acid in evening primrose oil that for some women, it makes a big difference when it comes to cramping. It just makes a massive difference. So, you know, when it comes to birth control, very, very individual as to whether or not it's going to give you better, you know, improve your results when it comes to exercise or decrease your results. But nothing's going to impact you better than just being healthy overall, I guess is where I want to end that at. So check this out. On YouTube, Mind Pump TV drops a new video every single day. We drop videos on subjects like comparing high-intensity interval training to low steady state type cardio. We talk about fasting. We did one where we talked about undulating your calories. And then we do lots of exercise demos where we'll pick workouts and exercises and teach them on video, because there's only so much you can learn from listening to us. Sometimes you have to actually see us. And the place to do that is on YouTube. So you go on YouTube, look up Mind Pump TV, subscribe to our channel. Also, if you want to ask us a question that we answer on these episodes, the place to do it is on Instagram, and the page to do it on is Mind Pump Media. And we also have personal pages. Mine is Mind Pump Sal, Justin is Mind Pump Justin, Adam is Mind Pump Adam, and Doug is Mind Pump Doug.
The Eagle.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.